welcome back to another episode of Forced Proximity. I'm Jonathan, and with me is my wife, Megan. This week, we have a podcast favorite author, Helen Huang's latest book, The Heart Principle. And this is Kwan's book.
Finally,
Kwan's book. But Kwan is different. He's not Yakuza Kwan anymore.
I love that he's different. I actually wrote a note because basically all of my notes are things I love about this book.
So the what didn't work is going to be quite short for you.
Nothing didn't work for me.
I know.
Yeah. Ordinarily something that I'll talk about later on would be a thing that doesn't work for me, but I think it was a stylistic choice. And even if it was just like words don't fail me now.
The author, ladies and gentlemen.
No. Even if it was just, you know, when you think about something like, and you don't know you're thinking about it.
Subconscious?
Yes. Even if it was a subconscious choice, this one nitpicky thing, I think it was the right style choice for this book.
Should I read the synopsis right away? Or do you have games or anything?
No, I don't have any games. I want to just get right into this book.
Yeah. And we're coming to you late. We're recording on a Tuesday night right before dinner. It was Halloween weekend. We were busy.
Yeah. If you know this podcast at all, you know Halloween's big
for Megan. Yeah.
Well, and I make it big for you, so.
Yeah, I could take it or leave it, but. Yeah. Even Hank wasn't really that into it.
Yeah, he was.
He went to like 10, 15 houses, and he called it a night.
He wasn't that into trick-or-treating. There's more to Halloween than trick-or-treating. Yeah. He was very into Halloween.
Yeah, and he's very happy to just give his candy away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he loaded up. I didn't even realize he loaded up his lunchbox on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
To share it with everyone. And he picked out very specific pieces that he wanted to give to each child. And because we go to, you know, co-op, homeschool co-op, like nobody cares if they take his candy and they just have candy for snack time.
Yeah.
That's fine. But yeah, he even brought some for the teacher and the teacher's baby who walks around the classroom. And
it wasn't like the shitty candy. He gave away good stuff, I bet.
He gave away stuff like his favorites, his personal favorites, the Hershey bars and the lollipops and orange stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. He's a very generous boy.
He is.
And he brought in his crab skeleton. He snuck that in his lunchbox too.
Oh, Hanky. All right. So... did you want me to read this or do you have something else?
No, I want you to read a synopsis so people have a general idea about what the book is about since we don't go through plot point by plot.
Yeah. So this is from bookofthemonth.com and it's the associate editor, Katie Yee. Synopsis. When violinist Anna Soon, or Sun, accidentally achieves career success with a viral YouTube video, she finds herself incapacitated and burned out from her attempts to replicate that moment. When her longtime boyfriend announces he wants an open relationship before making a final commitment, a hurt and angry Anna decides that if she wants an open relationship, no, that's not what it says. Anna decides that if he wants an open relationship, then she does too. Translation, she's going to embark on a string of one-night stands. The more unacceptable the man, the better. That's where tattooed motorcycle riding Kwan Deep comes in. Their first attempt at one-night stand fails, as does their second and their third, because being with Kwan is more than sex. He accepts Anna on an unconditional level that she has just started to understand herself. However, when tragedy strikes Anna's family, she takes on the role that she is ill-suited for until the burden of expectations threatens to destroy her. Anna and Kwan have to fight for their chance at love, but to do that, they also have to fight for themselves.
Hmm.
That's a good synopsis.
It is.
And it reminded me why I was furious at points in this book.
Yeah.
And not with Helen and her writing or anything, which we can get into why some people are number one bullshit for trying to call out Helen Huang on this.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to do that? Will we get roasted by other podcasts for that?
I'm not calling out any specific person because we don't know a specific person, but we can call out the, I don't think it needs to be called out. Somebody said that this book, like, called into question the romance-ness of this book, and that is definitely number one bullshit. Just because you don't have, like, an alpha male and a vampire or a werewolf, and, you know, it's not... romance is changing, I've noticed. Relationships don't all have to look the same.
Yeah.
And it started to change, I think, when they started to ask for more diversity, whether it's, like, male-male or people of color.
Yeah.
Or neurodiversity. That changed. So now you've got, you know, two black men, one of them's autistic, the other one is, I don't know, pansexual.
That's what I was going to say.
One of them's in a wheelchair, like, just, you know, throw every diverse thing you can think of at them. We've got that.
At what point does that...
Actually, we don't have that book.
At what point is there a diminishing return on that where it's like patronizing?
Well,
is there such a point?
No, because I think as long as it's not written by a white person, because that would be patronizing.
Yeah.
Like it's not patronizing. If that's your story, write your story. But like we started to get that, but we still have those people in very... relationships that look the same, like and a romance arc that has to look exactly the same. Like, here is a romance. This is what men must do in a romance. This is what women must do, or the women character in a romance. They must follow this protocol, and I don't know. Nobody questioned whether or not you can, you know, be in a relationship before you're 100% emotionally perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing romance 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
I don't know.
We'll go with 3 years ago.
Seems like one long year because of COVID.
It was 3 years ago. And I remember having to follow strict parameters about what kind of emotional topics you can include, because that's just what people did and that's what readers wanted.
Yeah.
And I think some people still have that mindset, such as, like, you can't enter into a relationship unless you are, you know, 100% fulfilled on your own. Like, you must be a whole complete person. You can only have one little quirk, which is your, you know, I joke about this a lot, but it's like your high heel collection. I have too many high heels, and that's my biggest flaw. And like, that's the acceptable flaw that a heroine can have.
Well,
a man, his acceptable flaw is that he's a workaholic.
I was going to say he works too much.
Yeah. And because of that, he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
But there's like
this, at 23.
Right. But it's just ridiculous. And why? It's like we can't have a real character in a romance, but you're going to complain at the same time and say people don't judge it seriously and call it trash. If all of your heroines' biggest flaw is their high heel collection, that's trash. Like, there's no merit to that. That's every book, like, published in the early 2000s. There's millions of that. That's trash.
Yeah.
It's a throwaway thing an author's writing to become one of those six-figure authors. It's not real.
Is that to not rock any boats or to ruffle feathers and just go with a very vanilla thing?
Well, I mean, the world is populated with a lot of basic bitches.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Basic bitches who have large high heel collections enjoy reading about heroines with large high heel collections. They're going to scoff at an autistic heroine because before Helen Huang, that was an unheard of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Helen Huang always takes it a step further. She gives her heroines like real flaws.
Yes.
And not autism is not one of them. Autism is not a flaw. I'm not saying that it is. It's a personality trait for her characters, but yeah, I'm not calling it a flaw, but she, like, Anna is flawed, and that is great. I love seeing that. But I don't think it even makes people uncomfortable. I think people just think it's not for romance. Mm-hmm. Romance is for people who don't have as big flaws because it makes the reader look at the, oh my gosh, I am not articulating well tonight. It forces the reader's eye off of the romance and more onto the characters. But I just don't accept that. I think romance has room for character growth. Besides, I'm going to do this one little thing so I'm a better lover to you. Like, I think that's wrong. You can have flawed people who enter in a relationship together and you can have them be support people to each other.
Which this book was.
Yeah.
And your book kind of break out of that with the heroines.
Well, I just write grumpy heroines.
Yeah. And Helen's male characters are as much as important to the books as the heroes.
Of course they
are. The heroines.
Yeah, they're not
just there to fill a tuxedo.
Right.
Where yours are too, but your two heroes have been very different.
One of my heroes was very traditional.
Yeah.
John is very traditional. And he's what I wanted because I had to... He had to be the opposite of Emerson, who's messy and flawed.
Yeah.
She's just like a mess. When you look at her, she's a mess. She's all over the place. So we needed someone who's like neat and clean and precise, but not in a controlling way and not in an OCD way. We needed her to look at him and just automatically think, oh, he can't be for me because he wouldn't. What could I bring to the table? And Waylon is just pure. Like, he's basically Quan.
Yeah.
He's, like, just a teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what autistic women need a lot of times.
Well, getting into this book, this Helen put questions at the back of her book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to use those.
Yeah, thank you.
So, do you want to use her questions first or our questions or kind of like sprinkle both?
I want to use her questions and then if we feel like there's anything more
that
we
want to
say. Okay. Because I have so many things I have highlighted. So I very strongly identified with Anna in this book, like her family identified, her violin playing and her art I identified with. How she experiences love and sex and everything, every single aspect of this book, I totally identified with. So I highlighted like every line practically.
Yeah.
I was trying to take some time before this episode started to review like things that I actually want to quote and things that I mean, everything is just like, oh, that reminds me of me. That reminds me of me. So obviously that wouldn't make a very good podcast. So I'm not going to just read every highlight. But I will read some of them because I think they'll resonate with a lot of people. So yeah, let us start with the questions. And it starts out with Anna doesn't know she has autism.
No.
She thinks she's just...
just an anxious person.
She just thinks she's like proud of herself for going to therapy.
Yeah.
And her therapist is thinking, she looks at her. It's like, do you do that thing that you're doing with your face? Do you do that a lot? And she's like, well, I read in a book that this means this. So I do it. And the therapist says, do you put into practice lots of things that you read in books about how humans express things? And Anna says, yes.
Basically everything she does in social situations.
Yeah. Which is called masking.
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting because I live my life like that, so I know. And I mean, I'm sure it's not masking for everybody because everybody's different.
Yeah.
But
from what she describes, it sounds exhausting.
Yes. So, discussion question number one has to deal with masking. Anna is a pro at masking, the process whereby autistic people intentionally observe and mimic their peers in order to fit in. But perhaps autistic people aren't the only ones who do this. True. How much masking do you do on a regular basis? What kinds of things do you do that could be considered masking?
I mean, how far does that go?
Well, I think the point she's trying to make is it goes pretty freaking deep.
Yeah.
It goes really far.
You can't go around saying the things you want to say to everybody. Like, you can't just blow up on the person who in the grocery line that has 50 items in the 10 item checkout. Like, you can't just, some people do.
Yeah.
And I bet they have a lot less stress in their lives.
But do they have any people in their lives left that would be a support system for them? I don't know.
Maybe they'll blow up on those people.
Yeah. Well, there's a part where Anna said, I keep wanting to call her Stella. There's a part when Anna says to Quan is like real, not real embarrassed about how he looks down there.
He's very,
he's self-conscious
about, because he had testicular cancer.
And he lost a testicle. He lost
one testicle and he opted to not have a prosthetic.
Right.
Why? Because he just said it is what it is.
Yeah, I think he felt weird about it. Yeah. He didn't want a piece of fakeness.
Yeah.
There.
So he just wasn't comfortable. And I guess he lost the ability to reproduce too.
I feel like we need a sequel. You know what? I feel like they said that just to get the pregnancy off the table.
Yeah.
Because there's no way. He loves kids so much. There's no way he didn't freeze his sperm before this process.
And just because
started.
You lose one doesn't mean you can't it, still
he
make
He still has a functioning testicle.
Yeah.
Unless he was already like that was a non-functioning testicle.
He lost a good one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But that wasn't explained very well, and I feel like that was just, you know, let's throw that off. That is not an option for this couple because she has so much to work through. We can't have that added burden on the reader who might be thinking, well, crap, what if she gets pregnant on top of all these other issues she's got going on?
I was thinking, my dad's cousin, I forget which one,
mm-hmm.
He had testicular cancer and had his one testicle removed,
mm-hmm.
and had a baby afterwards. It was the fourth kid they had.
Mm.
And it came out, and my dad is 100% Puerto Rican, and all his cousins are 100% Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And this cousin was married to an Irish lady. So the kids are not super dark,
uh-huh,
complected.
Yeah.
The last one was really
light
skin.
Oh, okay.
And his brother said, it's only because you have half the power. You're only going half strength.
That's funny.
It's probably more like the mom's Irish genes took over on that one.
Well, I like that because it's like, you know, turning colorism on its ear.
Yeah. As if it's like the paint shaker at a Home Depot.
Well, when Anna says, oh, she starts laughing because Quan's having this moment where they're going to, you know, show themselves for the first time to each other. And she starts laughing because he's explaining what he might look like to her. And she says, sorry, I'm not laughing at you, but really, I don't care what you look like down there.
I'm laughing at the fact that you think I care.
Yeah. She says, I've read books where women are obsessed with how a guy's balls look, and I never understood it. Nice ones, not nice ones, they're all the same to me. I don't know how to appreciate them.
And he's kind of like...
And he says, I could get angry, I realize. Her words are insensitive in a way. But I know she doesn't mean them to be.
No.
And I'm like... Is this insensitive or is this just...
It's insensitive in a sense that he's concerned and she's kind of just laughing it off. And it's not. He knows it's not. He knows he's being overly sensitive. But it could be construed like with a not as patient person as Quan.
Well, I'm glad I have you that I'm to be married to because this... I was like... He says her words are insensitive in a way. I'm thinking, oh, this didn't even occur to me that this is an insensitive reaction. Like, I don't know. I'm not very good.
Well, what do I have to do with it?
Because you are very much like Quan in the way that you like respond to me. Like, you know that I can be open and honest with you. And you don't, like, get bent out of shape because I don't coddle you.
Very rarely.
I am not somebody... Even if I'm aware that something might sound insensitive, I have been suffering from autistic burnout myself for the past 10 years. I do not have the patience to coddle people, except if they're my son. Like, he's the one that gets empathy. No one else does.
And there's nothing you could say. I mean, in your day-to-day things and our interactions, there's nothing you say that's as bad as my life in middle school.
Yeah.
I was overweight, had acne, braces, Coke bottle glasses. I couldn't hear. Still can't hear out of my left ear. So I had to walk around with like this transmitter that the teacher would wear a microphone and I would have the headphones to listen to, which now no one would make fun of that. But I'm from the 90s.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. The 90s were not a good time to be.
To be the odd duck.
No.
So, no. Nothing anyone can say now.
Well, and it's not like, I'm not saying I'm this, like, mean person. No, I'm a very nice person that naturally thinks well of the people that I love. So, it's not like I go around saying horrible things to people all the time. I'm not the person to go to if you're having a bad day and you just need to talk about it and you just want, like, me to listen. And I don't even know what you want to say. I am the person you go to solve the problems. I am not the person to sit and, like, I don't know, give you a cup of tea and wrap you in a blanket. Like, that's not...
Well, we're both not that.
Right. I just... So, and for me, like, if I'm having a bad day, if I even... like attempt to talk about it because I don't I keep that crap inside where it belongs.
Where do we hide our feelings? In our muscles.
What's that from? I like it.
It's a TikTok. Oh. What do we do when they get too much? We got bigger muscles.
Well, yes. I just don't see a point in complaining. I think problems are to be fixed and resolved.
Yeah, but sometimes you can't do it by yourself.
Well, and that's where I'm like Anna, and I don't know what to share, and I don't know what actually is a problem. I don't know how to get it solved. I don't realize there are other people that can help solve it. I see a problem, and I think despair, sadness. I turn into Dio. Sad. And I just like shut down and words don't come. So I don't get help with my problems, and I don't help you with your problems. And it's just because I don't recognize problems.
It's a fair trade.
So I just don't recognize them. I don't see, like, I don't think like that, you know, corporate, let's form some actionable steps.
Let's get some synergy and fusion.
I'm like, let's dig a big hole. Push all the bodies in it and light it on fire.
Well, I guess that's where I am a good match for you, because I am the problem solver.
I enjoy problem solving once it's laid out what the actual problem is. But I just don't see a point in, like, you know, discussing. And then coddling, like, if I know you're the one that messed up, or if you're the one that's having faulty thinking about something, I'm going to tell you. Because if I did have a problem, I would expect the same courtesy. Like, hey, you know she wasn't actually rude to you. You were rude to her. And I would say, oh, crap. Okay. Like, I don't expect, like, somebody to be like, yeah, bitches be like, bitches be tripping. When your friend knows that, like, it was your fault.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that. So that's what I mean by coddling. And she doesn't do that. To me, this is... you shouldn't have to be... I don't know. You shouldn't have to coddle the one you're with. If you have to pretend to like a man's balls, to like all balls in general, so that you can... like, worship his one ball because it's so much better than all those beautiful balls you've seen.
The one ball to rule them all.
Like, how much energy is wasted on that? Like, the pretending.
I don't know.
Ugh. Anyway, it reminds me of, you said, how deep do you go to mask? I think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of women. How many women hate their mothers-in-law? But they can't say it to their husbands. They can't be honest. Like, hey, your mom's a piece of shit because she raised you like this. They have to, like, because they've been told by society, well, a man loves his mom and you can't say anything about her because of blah, blah, blah. I don't even know the reasons why not, because honesty is not involved in that conversation. And I reject that. So women mask and they pretend that their husband had a great relationship with his mom, and they pretend so much. And now that I'm like friends with wives, I just don't understand wife behavior. Like, just be honest. You don't need to coddle your husband's balls. Just say they're not great to begin with. It doesn't matter what your fucking balls look
maybe
like.
Maybe some of the husbands can't handle that.
I'm sure that's the case. No,
it'll turn into a huge fight.
I'm 100% certain that is the case. But men don't seem to mask that as much. Men don't seem to mask and, like, I'm saying masking by coddling. Like when you coddle somebody by like pretending that you like balls in the first place, or you care enough about what a man's testicles look like to be able to come from a place of empathy when talking about your partner's testicles.
Yeah.
Like, that's masking. You're masking the fact that you don't really care in the first place. They're not hideous.
Well, and that's,
they're not gorgeous. They're just there.
A body part.
They're,
it's
yeah.
like an arm.
Yes.
Or a toe.
Yeah.
Well, and that's an easy one to not mask. So that's like,
I don't think
she's not putting more stress on herself for something stupid.
Right.
And he internalized that and said, I'm not like, I could be offended, but she doesn't mean offense. So I'm not going to, again, you choose to be offended.
He
chose to not be offended.
Yes. He also has an autistic brother and an autistic cousin-in-law.
Yeah. Whatever that is.
His best friend / cousin's wife is autistic because she's Stella from The Kiss Quotient. And his
who makes
brother,
a cameo.
Yeah. I was so glad to meet her again.
Yeah. Oh, she was like,
Stella's back.
She was like two pages, maybe one page.
Yeah.
And like redirected the ship of the book. Like,
yes.
She redirected Quan with like within a paragraph.
With honesty.
Because she cannot lie.
And because that's the thing. Like, if you're going to the doctor and you have a problem, do you want your doctor to say, you have cancer, but here's how to treat it? Or do you want your doctor to say, oh, that really sucks for you. I'm so sorry. Have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Snuggle on the couch. Like, you want your doctor to fix the problem.
Yeah.
We need people who are actually honest, who can, and because that makes it function again. He didn't need empathy at the moment. He needed facts. And the facts were he was better for the company. And coming from somebody who is brutally honest, but not insensitively honest.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
In relationships, it could be professional relationships or social, whatever, friendships. Not everyone, like you said, the husbands can't handle the honesty. Sometimes you have a boss that's a narcissist. You have a friend that's a narcissist. And when you're honest with them, they get vindictive.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In a business setting with someone who signs your paychecks and like holds your financial stability in their hands, you have to mask.
Yes.
And that's why you need unions.
Well, and that's why you need therapy, because there are people like I can't be brutally honest with a lot of important people in my life. And that is, it just makes me tired.
Yeah.
And it makes me despair. And it's like screwed up the past 30 years of my life. So I totally understand. Like, masking is hard. And you have to do it to save yourself sometimes. Like, Anna says, like, Anna has to mask in front of her family more than anybody else, her immediate family, because she says, family is not safe, not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Tough love is brutally honest, and it hurts you to help you. Tough love cuts you when you're already bruised and berates you when you don't heal faster. Like, I think that is not an autistic experience. I think that is a lot of toxic family experience.
I think that's a lot
experience.
More families than people are willing to admit.
Yeah.
And you don't want to admit that, like, you could have come from a situation like that, because then now you have this whole other thing bubbling up.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole, like, things from the past. So I put it in your muscles, man.
Yeah.
And then die of a heart attack when you're 65. Because that's what's going to happen.
Mm.
Or you get a good support system and you yell at them about it and gets out, and then maybe it's fine.
And hopefully you have the opportunity to not be around the people.
Yeah.
That either have hurt you or that you have to mask in front of.
I see a lot of that, like on Instagram, people putting, it's not a meme, it's just like a graphic of saying, if a family member is toxic, it's okay to not ever talk to that family member, even if it's your parents.
Yeah, I've done it.
All right, next question. That was a long answer.
Well, that's like the theme of the book.
That is the theme of the book.
We didn't quite finish that question because we stopped halfway through because there was question. Do you think masking is an important social behavior? Like absolutely. You said.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Of course it
is. It's how society functions.
Yeah. I think even, I don't know, my mom and I started watching the show Maid on Netflix.
Yeah.
Even if you're, you know, trying to escape an abusive partner, like you have to mask in order to get to a safe place to get out. And I feel like that is sort of a metaphor for masking in any situation. You mask for safety, whether it's to preserve the status quo and therefore bring you more peace, or like people, it's not always just, you know, fitting in. Like, oh, autistic people, I just want to be lining up my Hot Wheels right now. That's not what it is. But, you know, I have to pretend to, you know, be a functioning adult. So I'm going to go out and crinkle my eyes up when I smile. That's not necessarily what masking is. It's just, it's any kind of acting that you do in your life. And I think it's always for safety. Okay, so let's move on. Anna believes her success was an accident, that she didn't earn it based on her talent and skill. And this is a source of pain for her as she struggles to earn it for real with her future performances. In your opinion, does she have imposter syndrome? Why? Have you experienced something similar?
She does have imposter syndrome. She shouldn't, but she's going to. For her to get to, it was a solo act, like, right? She had a solo, or she became first chair because a car full of violinists got into an accident and they couldn't all, like, the first, second, third, fourth string couldn't do it. So they put her up and she killed it.
Yeah. And it was coming after she did some, she tripped on stage and did something really cute.
She tripped on stage, knocked over the
music
the music stand and said, sorry, music stand. And everyone thought, oh, how cute. And then she just like shredded the violin. I don't know if that's a thing, but.
Sure.
And everyone's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then it had a million views on YouTube and she became famous.
Yes.
YouTube famous.
And the composer of that piece wrote another piece specifically for her.
Yeah. And she sucks at it.
Yeah. And she can't.
And it's not that she sucks at it. She just gets hung up on one spot. And instead of practicing that one spot, she gets like a running start from the beginning of the song and gets to that spot and messes up again. And she keeps doing it and doing it. And doing it. And she's not getting better at that spot because she's not practicing that spot.
I know. That's what I was thinking. Just practice the measure. But I'm thinking, I don't know. I can't envision how she is messing up where she needs to go back to the beginning. I get that you, there might be a run or something that you mess up.
Because in her head is if she can't play it through right, she can't play it. She hasn't earned the right to play it all the way through. But that's the dumbest thing because you have to break it down.
I tell my violin students, start at the very last measure of a piece. Like once you've got that, go to the very second last measure of the piece and just play that measure. Once you've got that down, then you can add in the next or the third to the last measure.
So by then you can play the whole
thing. Like playing it backwards does something to your brain that it places more emphasis on the technique.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. That's if you have a problem. She has no problem with technique. Her technique is flawless. She also plays with a lot of feelings. So I don't know what she could possibly
It's the imposter syndrome.
Because
of the planets aligning for her to get that shot in the first place.
Yeah.
And then her going viral. And then someone a piece just for her.
Right.
So
and
she
then
has
coupled with her autism, which is like, it has a lot of compulsive needs. And so she has a compulsive need to play something from start to finish.
Yeah.
And also there would be no book if she just started at the measures that were.
And
movement or whatever it is.
I won't say that part didn't work for me because it worked.
Yeah.
But it made me so mad. It's like, just practice that spot.
It did.
Get your metronome and practice that spot. What are you doing?
As a violinist, it was making me very angry. It was making me real angry.
Go slow and then speed up when your fingers get used to it. What are we doing here?
Right. And I don't know. I was just trying to I was thinking she couldn't find the emotion in the piece. This is what could be the only thing that I was thinking that could be messing her up to the point where she needed to start from the beginning. Because, you know, every piece is going to be like a song. It's going to start somewhere. I don't know how long this piece of music is, but I'm imagining there are, you know, it starts slow and then there's a faster part and it ends up slow again or, you know, vice versa.
Whatever, yeah.
But she needed the emotional arc. But I understand also, okay, so Anna is very much Helen Huang, the writer herself.
And, yeah, Helen says this at the end.
Yes. This is not a spoiler. And I also read like every interview with her regarding this book. And she says like she had to start this book over and over and over again because she was experiencing, I don't know about imposter syndrome. I hadn't heard her use that phrase regarding herself, but she was experiencing a lot of struggle and a lot of mental health issues and a lot of burnout when it came to writing this book. Plus, she is a brilliant writer. Nobody crafts a story like her, I think. She is my favorite storyteller in romance.
Mm-hmm. This is a great story.
And her other two books, too. She just, like, is amazing. And she's so amazing, it's just, like, and she's an expert storyteller. I that's something that comes very difficult to me. And I feel like that's, maybe it's not natural to her. Maybe it's just highly crafted and so finely tuned that she's able to like shape the story so that you don't even know how she's doing it. Because you know how we always break things down and it's like, obviously the author needed to do this to get here. So that's what she did. You can't do that with Helen's books.
No.
It's like, I don't know how she did that. How did she even get here? How did they get to this point? How is it so organic? But she's just like, that's just her storytelling. So I don't even know about, I guess, imposter syndrome. I don't like that word because I feel like it's bandied about so much on social media.
It is.
And it's
but
a
I think
cute thing to have lately.
I think it fits for her, though. Like, in her case, it actually is the thing.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I don't feel like I'm good at baking or something like the high heels.
Right. Well, I hear it because most of my Instagram is Bookstagram and then mostly authors saying like...
Or they have imposter syndrome.
Yeah. And it is kind of, it's really impostery feeling to publish your own work.
Yeah. I could see that.
Like, because you can decide, you decide when it's good enough to hit publish. Helen didn't. She has a lot of feedback. She has everybody in her corner. Everybody in the whole world is rooting for her. So it's a different problem.
Mm-hmm.
Her problem now is that she wrote the Kiss Quotient and that was like a runaway smash, like incredible once in a lifetime success.
Yeah, but the other two have been really good
too. She followed it up with The Bride Test which I think is a better work.
Yeah.
But people didn't like it. It didn't have the same magic, I don't think. Even though it was like hyper realistic to me. I think
I know why.
It was such a great story.
Because it was two Asian people. And people are racist. That's not why at all.
I don't think so. I think they didn't.
I'm kidding.
I think that they. I don't know. I think that they just, you know, fans are fickle and horrible. That's just it's
buy my
we
books.
Are. No, I'm a horrible fan too. When I love an author's first book, I'm real reluctant to read their second book.
Really?
Yeah,
because you don't
I feel
be let
like
down.
I don't like. What if the second? What if I read the second one and it's not as good and it spoils the magic? And then I don't like the first one as
yeah,
much
but
because
you don't,
it's not a.
You didn't read it. People read the other one, said it wasn't as magical. I liked the second one as much as
the
first
test.
One.
Yeah.
I like all three of them the same. Like,
yeah.
They're kind of anthologies that bleed together.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I do know. I like it.
But then, you know, getting to the third book. And The Bride Test still was very critically acclaimed. It still sold really well, I'm assuming. I don't know her numbers. And people did like it. There are a lot of fans like us
yeah,
who loved
need
it just
to
as
like
much.
It.
Right.
You just need enough people to
right.
like it.
But then you, getting to your third book, and how do you even write three autistic characters in a family and without it becoming formulaic?
And like, it didn't.
Here's another autistic book. And it didn't.
It didn't at all.
How do you, like, that is,
that's talent.
That is mastery. Yeah. So every book in the series, it's really high concept, but it feels like it could actually happen.
It does, because more people are autistic than you think.
Case in point, Anna, who's very normal.
Yeah, and naturally, Quan would. I don't think he's attracted because she's autistic, but he fits with her better because he has experience with Kai and Stella.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I know. Oh, I know what this is.
And he,
this is not a big deal.
His personality is such that he loves people.
Yeah.
He's a, like a student of human nature. He collects people's quirks. Like
yeah.
His hobby is collecting people's quirks.
And I don't know if I collect quirks, but I do remember people's quirks.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Quan is... Of all the heroes we've read, I think I'm the most like Quan.
I think you're more like Michael.
Am I?
Quan, kind of. Yeah. I think you're a lot meaner than Quan. I think you collect quirks, but you're like, no, she used the same word three times. She's out of here. She's got a catchphrase.
That does bug me.
You notice quirks and like don't like the person because of it. But I mean, you claim to like everybody.
I'm getting better.
I don't care if you do or don't. It doesn't bother me one way or another. Just like my quirks, because your life would be hell if you didn't. Because I've got a lot of them.
You don't have a catchphrase. I don't like when people have like a regular person is like, going through life like Steve Urkel and has a catchphrase.
Yeah.
Like, broaden your horizons. Find something new to say.
No, it's usually like, at the end of the day.
What?
It's usually something like, at the end of the day.
Oh.
Like, they'll slip it into every conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in order to wrap things up. You know, they'll be complaining about the problems. But you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. Like,
and
it just, you might as well be saying words.
As much,
fill the air with words.
As much as catchphrases bother me, I think I might have one.
Oh, no.
Because I say not for nothing a lot.
I don't hear that very often. Maybe you use it in work.
Maybe I think I use it more than I do.
Yeah. I used to use one word that Sarah called me out on. It was like, incidentally. My grandfather's catchphrase was, incidentally. Incidentally.
The most Harvard-y catchphrase you could have. Come on, Merton.
Okay, so let's move on to question three.
How many questions are there?
Well, there's a lot.
Well, we can't do all of them.
Okay.
Just do the good ones.
Okay. Is it possible to achieve perfection with something as subjective as art?
No.
Yes. Which works, literature, music, paintings, etc., are perfect in your opinion?
Oh.
As a reader, do you want writers to tailor their writing to your personal preferences? No. Or do you want to see what they're inspired to create on their own?
So perfect as in unanimously everyone agrees that this is a perfect...
No, are perfect in your opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Like?
I don't know. Shit.
Mozart's Requiem, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Yeah.
Mahler's Second.
For you.
John William Waterhouse's The Annunciation is the perfect Annunciation painting.
I like the
Rage Against Machines, Bulls on Parade.
I like the painting with the dogs playing poker. That's perfect. I don't know. See, my favorite band's Led Zeppelin, and I would not say Stairway to Heaven is perfect. It's too long. It's too kitschy.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that. Even they don't like it.
When the Levee Breaks.
That is the best one.
Yeah.
That's the best song.
I think there are a lot of rock songs that are perfect because they're 3 minutes long.
It's
easy to achieve perfection when you're creating a piece that's 3 minutes long.
When the Levee Breaks... Communication Breakdown, to me, I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
You got the good opening riff, and you got Robert Plant screaming, John Bonham. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
All of their songs that they do about, like, that's Lord of the Rings based,
mm-hmm.
I love all those.
Yeah.
And those aren't short. Those are epics.
Yeah.
Misty Mountain Hop's pretty... That's pretty short.
I love Misty.
But that's a great one. Ramble On. No, Ramble On is the best one.
Yes.
That's their best song, in my opinion.
Pretty much anything Bela Fleck writes is perfect.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
He is a banjo player. But he does a lot of work with other artists. And he writes these collabs that are just, like, heartbreaking
mm-hmm.
in their simplicity, but they're just perfect. The song Big Country is just so beautiful. It would be a great funeral song.
I'm trying to think. Is art sports? Or sports art?
No.
I was thinking
maybe, like, synchronized swimming.
Well, yeah. I was thinking that year Florida State won the national championship, not only, like, it was perfect.
Okay.
They were undefeated.
Well, okay, so you're talking about a game? I think that could...
No, not, like, the entire season.
Oh.
They played... They made... That's one of the best teams there's ever been. Like, they made very few mistakes. And in the national title game,
mm-hmm.
when they were down in the... first half,
yeah.
It's because Auburn was stealing their plays.
Mm.
They were reading Jimbo Fisher's lips,
yeah,
and knew what was coming because one of their members on the staff was a high member of our staff and went over, and then they started covering him with towels when he made the play call, and they couldn't beat us.
Wow. So I think that counts in this particular circumstance, and I think there you can achieve perfection. When you feel it, if you, the artist, feels like there are certain times when things just
mm-hmm.
click.
Yeah.
And I think You know when you've got it.
And is it confidence?
No.
It's
something beyond confidence.
When I played guitar a lot, mm-hmm. like practice every day, it got to a point where I didn't even think about it, and I knew my finger was going to go to the right note without yeah. even it was I just knew it was going there.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen a lot. But I knew, like, it just felt, it felt like I wasn't even holding the neck of the guitar. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And now I play guitar never.
I play violin never. So. But I don't know. I kind of feel like I want to start playing again.
I do not want to
play. But then guitar. I know I'm going to open my case and I'll be like, no.
I can tell you right now, I don't want to play. I don't have time.
I don't have time either. Okay, so I'm going to skip ahead to a few questions. According to AARP, there are nearly 53 million Americans providing unpaid caregiving labor for family members. The majority of them are women, and they're at higher risk for experiencing the fallout from caregiver stress. They're also more likely to live in poverty than non-caregivers because they have to leave the workforce to tend to those in need. The question is, what can society do to better protect these caregivers?
Universal health care.
And they're not going to do it. So society, what can society do? Or what will society do? Which is nothing.
Well, which society? They don't have this problem in Europe.
Society, yeah, I know. Well,
they don't have this problem in Japan.
Well, she's talking about Americans providing unpaid care.
Okay, so in American society.
In American society.
M4A, Medicare for All. That's how you take care of it.
Nothing will happen. Except they'll put some memes up on Facebook saying, are you a caregiver? You should really do some self-care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Toxic positivity.
You should sleep more. You should treat yourself once in a while. You need to take breaks.
Man.
So what they do is guilt you into masking it more.
Yep. And that's just good propaganda. And, you know, if you've listened to our show, we don't get very political ever. But if you've heard what I am a pretty conservative person.
Yeah.
Would you agree? I mean, I'm more independent. Like, I don't belong to a party. I flirted with Libertarian Party, but I think they're stupid.
I think you're so far back in history of conservatism. It's not even conservatism anymore. It's like,
I don't know what it is. Like, my favorite president is Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all for universal health care, and he also streamlined the government. When he was, I don't know what, like his presidency, how great it was, but I know when he was police chief in New York, he's like, we got to get rid of these stupid laws because it's going to make our job hard and it's dumb to enforce.
Yeah, we still have all that though.
Yeah, but
we still have a lot of really shitty laws and then no laws that are effectual.
Yeah. Well, that's how you fix that. Universal health care.
Yeah. I had this conversation with my mom a few nights ago, and we were talking about, like, she's always concerned about my mental health because she's my mom, and she I don't know, I have really bad mental health. And I don't really feel the need to better my mental health. So I'm just, you know, my brain is a lost cause at this point. But I said, but basically now I'm in the point where she like is going to look at me and tell me to sleep more because she knows I'm experiencing burnout. But it's like, how am I going to do that?
Yeah. How are you going to help me do that?
And it's nothing about her, but it's like now, if I was honest about how I felt on like a minute by minute basis, I'd either be Baker acted or I would be like, or everyone would be afraid of me. Or they would be just so uncomfortable around me. that I'd have to hide it, which is even more work for me. So it's just easier to hide it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I don't hide it completely. I don't pretend everything's okay. Like my head is a mess. Like I'm a terrible person. Nothing's going to get fixed. Like I don't intend on fixing it because I'm just like beyond hope at this point. But I'm not going into specifics because it doesn't matter. It's not going to get fixed. There's no fixing what I need. Like, I basically need $7 million and a New York Times bestselling book. Because I really think, like, at this point, like, financial success is the only thing that will make me...
Money will buy happiness?
Yes. Yeah. Because I'm unhappy because I'm not surrounded by pretty things all day. Essentially. I'm not living in, like, my walk-in fireplace home. And... Like, I don't know. I'm a person that, like, has to be surrounded by, like...
And there's like, is it irony? What am I looking for?
I don't know.
It's like, I'm the person that gets you, but I'm also a teacher, so I can't, like, help you with any of that stuff.
Well, I mean, you're not somebody I go to talk about my healthcare, because for one, you're my husband, not my therapist. For number two, no. I can't seek therapy because I do the same thing Anna does. I just tell my therapist what they want to hear so that they can feel good about helping me. And so I've never had I've been to therapy like 8 times in my life.
No, but
I've never done anything.
What I'm saying is if I... like understand you like how I do.
Well, no.
And
but
I that's... was and I had a clothing designing business that was getting bought by Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
Like Quan is. It'd be a little different.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm always going to be like a negative Nelly. That's just how I was raised. And I enjoy that aspect of my personality. Like, that's who I am, and I'm okay with it. But if I show people how really negative I am and the things I really think, like, no one would, like, people would just be so nervous to be around me all the time. And I know, because I've done that. I've let that, like, vulnerability slip. And then people, like, look at me with these worried eyes all the time. And it's like, I can't have that. That's not productive. There's nothing more I can do. I cannot do anything else in my life to improve my life. Because I am incapable. I am burnt out. So the answer is just to hide it.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be the answer for me. Because this has been the case since I was like 10 years old. I've always been burnt out over masking things. Like when I was a girl, like my parents, like... Like, I didn't walk right. So they made me walk a different way. So I wouldn't, like, be one of those people who walked funny. And I didn't even walk funny. It's just if I didn't, like, if I was ever goofy or if I was ever, like, slightly off kilter or slightly off of normal. And I am not a normal person. But to my parents, like, having a not normal child... Like, that was just, like, unacceptable. And that had to change. And, yeah, so I, like, was forced to mask. And then, like, the burnout started at a real young age. And it never stopped.
Your parents were young, so they... I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not, this is not me bitching about my parents. This is just like, my life sucks. I know your life sucks too. My life doesn't suck any more than everybody else's. It's just, I'm just saying, another way, we have to mask. Like, society doesn't want to drop the mask. I'm not saying, like, I'm masking to cover up my love of lining up stuff or, like, flapping my hands. I'm just saying, like, I have to mask.
To get through the day.
Yeah. Because, so I don't have to mask more. Like, so I don't have to hide more. That's just what. Hopefully, all autistic people can be like Anna and be rich and have another rich caregiver.
Yeah, she came from wealth.
Where she doesn't have to worry about work or paying bills.
Yeah.
Like, she, or cleaning. Like, my apartment looks like hers, but it can't because I'm a mom and I have dinners to make. And no matter how much, like, that burns me out, I have to do it because that's what you have to do every day. So nothing will improve. So hopefully Anna never has to have children. And, like, Quan will always be accepting of having a mold ring in his bathroom sink. Although I don't know why he can't fucking clean.
Or pay someone.
Or pay someone to clean with his Louis Vuitton money. Why he has to, like, force Anna to not clean the mold out of their bathroom sink. But that's another story. But, yeah. So, Anna is very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day. Anna is very privileged. Because she has the financial means to not work and to not burn herself out more. She can just focus on sleeping.
Yeah.
Which is real nice. And it's what a lot of people need. Like, sleep is the answer. But it's not an answer any of us are going to get.
And she doesn't have any kids, like you said.
Yeah.
One more?
Yeah. The book ends with Anna playing before an audience once again. Do you wish you knew how people reacted to her performance? Why does the book end before she finishes playing? No, I don't need a reaction. The whole point is she was playing.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Just like perfection is sort of in the eye of the artist. The fact that she went out on stage and it like ends with the line, "I play."
Yeah,
like that means it's perfection.
Yeah,
it's perfect enough for her. Which is pretty perfect.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Do we want to get into our questions? Because we got a lot done.
I think we talked enough about the book. It sounded at the end like I didn't like it, but that's not true. I'm a little resentful that she has no responsibilities.
Yeah. I think that just hit you too, didn't it?
No, it did. But I was like, she's so fucking privileged. Because, like, she pays her bills late. Oh, but she can just get caught up on her bills. Like, where is this money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
That's great that you have all this money. And she's not a real person, so it's fine.
These books, I mean.
But she also lives in a city, and she can eat takeout every day.
Where do they live?
Have to
L.A.?
Cook. San Francisco.
Oh, my God. It's an expensive city. They're all expensive.
I don't know how she's not terrified that Quan will leave her for someone better. Like, how she won't leave her. Like, one day he's going to wake up and realize, I can have some other hot bitch that, like, will clean the bathroom and not spend all my money on doing nothing. And that I don't have to, like, rock like a baby every night and not have sex with
for months
or like the 2 years that she was busy sleeping.
She was sleeping for 2 years.
Yeah.
Eef.
Quan is a saint.
Yeah.
And all he could do was run about it.
Yeah. Run about it. Book boner level. You want to do that? One to five.
One.
Yeah.
It's not that it wasn't steamy. It's not that it wasn't. I like the slow burn. I like the build. I liked that she had issues, but it wasn't
It wasn't about that.
No, the focus of the sex scenes was her healing and her figuring out how to show him what she needs. And I like the fact that when she finally showed him, he was like sort of gonna just like leave her hanging.
Yeah.
But I do. Let's end with some more things that we liked, because this is like,
okay.
I feel like we've gotten too negative on this book, and I do love this book. So I love that when we meet Quan, first of all, they have a meet cute that's just really nice. They meet over their phones.
On Tinder, right?
Or whatever app. Whatever it is. I call them all Grindr, but I don't know. I know that is wrong by now, but I'm not exactly 100% sure it's wrong. That's how I feel every time I bring up dating apps. They're all Grindr to me, and I don't 100% know that that's wrong. Okay, so, the meet cute, it's like, yeah, they meet over there, over the intranet, they swipe, and they start chatting, because they're both looking for just,
a one-night stand.
But then they start watching an octopus movie together in their own respective homes and on their own phones. It. Yeah, and I just love that.
And he said, "Do you want to call?" And he called her, and she didn't pick up. She's like, "I'm not ready to do this." He said, "That's fine. We can keep texting."
Yeah, I love how honest she was. I wish I could have ever been not as honest as she was. We're together because I did the same thing. So we had a similar. I decided that, like, I was never dating again, and. Well, and if I did come across somebody, because just, you know, having a relationship wasn't important to me. It was never a thing that I sought out. So I was fine. Like, I wasn't going to date. It wasn't like, I hate all men. I'm never dating again. It's just not something that I cared about. And I told myself, if I ever was going to, like, meet someone or date or, you know, whatever, spend time with anyone, I was going to be honest and I was going to be myself, and I wasn't going to, you know, I wasn't going to try to make them feel at ease just because that's what I did with everybody. Mm-hmm. And so you were the first person that I was myself with, because it's like this, there were no stakes. It's like, I don't care about this. It's not like, because before I was like, I'm never going to find someone to marry, and that's what you're supposed to do. And one day I want to be married. So every guy I would meet, it would be like, this might be the last chance. So it's like the stakes were so high. I was never myself with anybody. And then I met you, and it's like, I don't even care about this, really. I just want to do my own thing. I don't care if I enter a relationship or not. And so with you, we went out on that date, and I was like, this is great. I don't have to say a word, because you talked the whole time. And I think I like nodded, and like, I didn't say much.
No.
But I was honest, and I was myself. And I think that's why. Well, we're together because for a lot of reasons, but like, we wouldn't have been together if that hadn't been the case.
If you masked.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I was masking a little bit. I always do. I always will.
There's also protecting yourself.
Right.
So that if you were masking, that's probably all you were doing.
Yeah.
Until you feel more comfortable to let more out.
Yeah. I like that all of her books, there's a neurotypical and neurodiverse pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all really different. Like Stella is more traditionally, you know, what people think of as an autistic woman.
Yeah.
She's a mathematician. or econometrician. She's just very, you know, cerebrally focused. She has, like, she's all about the textures and the social awkwardness to the point where she just, abandons society, basically. She doesn't have friends. And she doesn't try to be out in the world the way Anna does.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anna's very high functioning, right?
I think Stella is too, but well, I think Stella was raised with support.
Yeah.
She was raised with probably an IEP.
Yes.
Going through school.
Where
Anna had no support because none. She seemed fine.
She seemed fine, and her older sister, who was more like a mom,
yeah,
was not really patient. And she was pretty awful.
Very, very awful.
And just like, you don't have autism, you're just lazy.
Yeah.
Just like, put that shit in your muscles and get through it. So.
Yeah, but it wasn't humorous.
No. So if you read this book, or if you have read this book, you'll know about Priscilla real quick.
JJ.
And you won't like her real fast.
Yeah. Yeah. She goes from bad to worse.
She does go from bad to worse. And there's no redemption for her.
I love that.
It's just like, she sucks that and we have to work around it.
That's so honest.
Yeah.
And there might not ever be.
No.
You're left with like, there's no wrap up. But I love that. I love that there's no neat little bow on the end of this.
Like, she comes through and helps Quan with his business acquisition.
Exactly.
But nope. She just went back to New York with her bitchy ass self and stayed there.
Yep.
And that was, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was real cool.
And Anna grew, and Anna is still growing. But you know what? I love that she didn't get her, you know, John Wick ending. She didn't get to throw her success in the faces of all of her family that have hurt her. She's still at the bottom.
Yeah. It didn't
sort of.
It didn't end. Yeah. It wasn't triumphant in the sense where you would traditionally think.
Yeah.
It was more of a personal triumph.
It was a personal triumph because she could now exist.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't gonna kill herself.
My favorite part, though, mm-hmm. was the second meeting with Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
When the new director of the project came in, who was her project to begin with.
Yeah.
And some dude came and just, like, snaked it from her.
Yeah.
And he got Me Too'd.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting acquired anyway.
Yeah.
It was that. That was the satisfying ending that you got.
Yeah. I was waiting for that. Like, somebody needs someone, a success.
Yeah,
here.
We need a satisfying ending somewhere. And they gave it to Quan. She gave it to Quan, which he deserved it.
He did. He's a real hard worker, and he does not get enough. And he's not the type that needs a lot.
No. Well, originally they were getting acquired by Louis Vuitton, and the douchey marketing director or whatever director of the project came in and said, we're gonna acquire you, but you're out because you're not what we're looking for.
Yeah.
You don't have the experience to do all this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, we'll take the company, we'll pay you handsomely for it, but we're taking Michael only. And then he called Stella. He's like, Michael has to do it. She's like, no, it won't work. They'll take MLA, their company. And without you, who's half of it, because you have a brand, whether you think so or not, is part of MLA.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis Vuitton will take it and destroy it. And you'll end up making nothing anyway.
Yep.
So you're better off just being like doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. and making less money, but more than enough.
Yeah.
And that's where Stella, in one paragraph, like, turned the book.
Yeah.
So I'd say she was a notable side character.
I also like that there wasn't there wasn't ever a point where she just magically overcomes her burnout and her looping of the violin. It's like she has to fight for everything. But I was expecting, you know, she has to play. It was this, so much pressure was put on her to play her father's favorite piece at his
funeral.
At his
birthday
party.
And funeral.
His last birthday party.
And funeral.
Yeah, but the pressure wasn't on her for the funeral.
And she didn't play it.
Yeah. But for that piece, you know, I think a lesser author would have written it as like she overcomes it just in time to play the piece one last time, and then he dies and everything is happy and hunky dory. And
not only did she not play it, she totally Kurt Cobain'd her violin.
Oh, destroyed yes. it. That's what I wanted to talk about. Like, when I was bringing up flaws, what did I write? I made a note of this.
And I thought that was a huge metaphor. That was, speaking of the levee breaks, the levee broke at that point and she just unloaded everything.
I was thinking of her as Medea, the woman who killed her children because her husband was having an affair. Ancient Greek mythology, Medea is a witch. She's married to Jason, of Jason and the Argonauts fame. He was cheating on her with some Greek princess, and she killed their children.
And then herself?
No.
Oh. That's Llorona.
Because that was the one thing that she could take away from him.
Oh, his kids.
Yeah, just like the Joy Luck Club, which we watched.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love that she also does something to her father. And we didn't talk a lot about the caregiving aspect because there's just so much.
Oh, it's huge. It's a huge part of the book.
There's so much of everything in this book. Every line is basically a treasure that talks about problems in today's society and being a human being. So there's a point. So her dad has a stroke. He's 80. Her dad has a stroke. He had always a very strong connection with Anna. Anna sort of intuitively knows what he wants, even after the stroke, and he's basically uncommunicative. They have to do everything for him. They have to feed him with a feeding tube. They have to change his diapers, and he doesn't want any of that.
Yes, sir. Basically, to stop feeding him.
Yes. So this is a really great book about end-of-life choices.
Yeah.
Anna respects his choice, but she knows, as you know, one of the younger members of her family, she doesn't have a voice. And as a disrespected younger member of her family, she doesn't have any say in the matter. So Priscilla, this older sister, just forces her own will upon the entire family and keeps him alive and like is just force feeding him with the feeding tube. She set up this schedule that's just harrowing, and it just does such a it devastates Anna. And there's that one point where it's a moment when Anna is, she's in her dad's room. It's her turn to, you know, be the caretaker. She has to feed him with the feeding tube. And he gives her the sign with his hand, like, don't, just stop it.
Yeah.
And she thinks, okay, he doesn't want this. Of course I would respect his decisions. And then he falls asleep, and she's so deep into her struggle with respecting her own choices and having her choices being respected by Priscilla, the older sister, that she shoves the food into his, she shoves the syringe of food into the feeding tube. So she feeds him anyway. Uh-huh. That is such a betrayal. I love that. As a flaw, that's like, oh my God, this character is like the deepest in all of romance. Uh-huh. That's a woman. We don't see, this is dude behavior. This is alpha male behavior. This kind of betrayal of her father's wishes and of her own.
Her own wishes.
Her own sense of, yeah. Her own knowledge of what he wants and her own knowledge of what's the right thing to do. So she betrays herself and she betrays him. And I think it's that betrayal that sends her overboard into the caregiver burnout. So she's experiencing
a lot of burnout.
Artistic burnout, autistic burnout, caregiver burnout. Just she's...
No wonder she slept for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are a caregiver, and it's horrible being in like a room with an older person who requires care of this level.
Mm-hmm.
And to be the one to do everything and like to never get a break. Like I'm not a caregiver person. Like
me
Anna.
Neither.
Anna is not a caregiving type. She experiences no joy in it. I don't either. I'm the worst.
I would rather outsource that so someone who's a professional who's trained can put their training to work, who
but
enjoys
you can
doing
only
it.
Only do it when you have the money to do it.
I know.
And they even had the money,
they
but
even
it wasn't.
Had the money.
Yeah.
Well, find the money.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know. That's hard. There's a book written by Emily Nagoski and Amelia Nagoski, and it's called Burnout. So I started reading that, and it's not specifically about any of these types of burnout. It's just burnout in general, which is a thing that we all experience. So I recommend reading that book after you read The Heart Principle.
Mm-hmm.
But you should definitely read The Heart Principle because there are so many lines. Like this isn't a thing that we can spoil for you.
No. And I know this episode is not as cheery as other ones we have, but it's an important book.
Yeah.
And it's not a rom-com. It's definitely a romance. But
it is. Yeah.
It's not a rom-com, and it's a pretty deep book, like especially if you have neurodiversity, if you're a caregiver, if you're an artist, like you can relate to this.
Or I think if you're a perfectionist.
If you're a perfectionist, absolutely.
And you can be a perfectionist and like Priscilla. I also identified a lot with Priscilla.
Did you?
Yeah. There was like one line at the end where she was talking about how she was like kind of like angry at the father for passing because that meant she had failed as a caregiver. And that's how I would take it too.
So
I get
it. No matter like what state he was in, she just wanted to keep him alive because that was her job.
Yep.
That's tough.
His death was a reflection on her own caregiving abilities. But also, he died 2 weeks after they kicked Anna out of the caregiving position. It makes me think, like, you did fail. You did fail, and you're still not willing to admit it. So there's so much.
So Anna was actually doing the best job.
Yes.
Because she was just a robot at that point, because she had mentally and spiritually just checked out.
Yeah.
She was just a vessel moving around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Priscilla's the worst.
Yes.
All right. Next week, do we have a movie?
I don't know yet.
All right. Well, we'll come back to you next week with a movie episode. And I have nothing else. Do you have anything else?
No. Our next book is a Petra episode. It's a Wallflowers book. The last of the Wallflower series, but before the Christmas one.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.